Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, welcome to Feeding the Future, Heritage Radio Network's show dedicated to feeding kids. I'm your host, Oriane Costantino, and our goal is to connect parents and caregivers to resources and suggestions and techniques to help them nourish the next generation the best we can. On today's show, we have a lot of exciting things. We have a guest, Rick Mast, the co-founder with his brother Michael of Mast Brothers Chocolate. Yum. Brooklyn's own bean-to-bar handcrafted chocolate. We're going to talk to Rick about his journey to chocolate. We're also going to talk about what the chocolate maker's kid eats and some life in the factory, life in the chocolate factory. Before we get to chatting with Rick, I usually start the show off with a segment dedicated to feeding kids. Specifically, I call it the toddler test kitchen, and oftentimes we talk about a recipe, but today we're going to talk about flavors. We're going to talk about how natural foods often reflect five flavors, and sometimes if we fall into habits, we sort of only train our palate to respond to two of those flavors. And I think that when all five are being engaged, you are, by nature, sort of having a more balanced and more fulfilled nutritional value in your eating. So the five flavors are sweet, salty, bitter, sour, and spicy. Sweet, salty, bitter, sour, spicy. That's five. And we're sort of in a vicious cycle when we eat processed or pre-made foods, in that those foods are really sort of focusing on the sweet and salty factor and leaving out the other three. So, I mean, there are lots of negative effects of overconsumption of processed foods. And they're really well known. Lack of nutrition, weight problems, it's an enormous issue, especially in the United States today. The quality of the ingredients in processed foods are very low. It's harmful to the planet, the packaging, the transporting, all of these things, on and on. But in this little segment, I just wanted to focus briefly on the effect that it has on your palate and what you begin to register as tasting good or tasting or pleasing to the palate. And I think it's great subject matter for Feeding the Future, because if we start introducing these flavors to kids when they're young, their acceptance levels, I think, will grow as they do. So what happens is these processed foods are, the flavors are perfectly engineered. We start to get used to these engineered flavors that are sort of like pleasing all of the brain's pleasure zones, and moving away from the acceptance and more importantly, the enjoyment of more natural foods, with like fewer ingredients. Well, let's just start off by saying natural is a weird word to stick in there, because it does appear on a box of, say, granola bars or sugary cereal. But we're going to stay focused on natural, as in coming up from the ground or hanging from trees or made by human hands, touched by hands. And it gets a little bit terrifying, because this taste ratio that scientists and researchers are developing, their goal is to make these foods addictive with their salty, sugary, salty, sugary, salty, sugary profile, just sort of like bombarding the taste buds with these flavors and supplying the brain with this pleasure that's really devoid of nutritional value and it's not therefore registering as satisfaction, so you can just keep eating them forever. So this is just touching so lightly on a major, major topic, and there's so much to be said. I recently came across an article from The Times, February 20th, called The Extraordinary Science of Addictive Junk Foods, and it sort of inspired me to begin this talk. It's reported by Michael Moss, who's also the author of Salt, Sugar, Fat, and the article itself is uncovering lots of scary details, and then the book would go into even greater detail and just sort of supply you with the info I think that we should know about just the salt content and the lack of nutritional value of these foods that we are exposed to with force, very purposeful force. But today, this conversation is a little bit of a sidebar to that monstrosity. I'm more trying to bring up the fact that eating in this way, relying on these scientifically flavored foods, really does lead to, for the most part, ignoring these other three flavors that our palates really need to experience in order to create this balance and also feel satisfied when partaking in food. So, in addition to the sensations of salty and sweet, we need to consider spicy, sour, and bitter, and try and keep the satisfaction level after consuming food high and using more quality over quantity. And sort of fight the fact that these companies bank on the fact that we're just going to eat these chips and crisps and snacks endlessly with our brains sort of turned off, and just losing that variety of flavor on our palate. So I think it's important to just consider these flavors when we're feeding ourselves and our kids. So just instead of relying on what you know works, the kid eats sweet things, the kid likes salty things, or I prefer sweet or salty, remember to vary those flavors in different ways and to keep it interesting for you and keep it interesting for whoever you're feeding. And this will help to train an acceptance level into the palate, and just a little step on the road to really good eating habits. So here are just a few tips of like introducing some of these flavors. Let your kid squeeze some lemon or lime on their fruit so that you're getting like a sour and a sweet sensation at the same time, so that it's a new flavor sort of going down with a familiar one. I think that'll raise the odds. Serving like pickles for some sour on the side of like a meal is a good way to get sour into the picture. Bitter ingredients include herbs, kale, broccoli, that family. So maybe mixing some chopped kale or broccoli into some like rice or pasta with some cheese to sort of make it like a savory bitter or salty bitter. Maybe add a little cayenne spice to some hummus, stuff like that. Stuff to slowly introduce these flavors and to keep the balance in the foods that we eat. And like I said, when we're experiencing these flavors from nature, we're getting more rounded nourishment because each of those flavors, sweet, salty, bitter, sour, spicy, are supporting different functions and different parts of the body, different systems. So just like when they say eat the rainbow and eat a variety of colors, natural foods containing colors, you're getting better nutrition. It's the same thing with those flavors. So it's kind of like nature is laying it out for you, giving you this roadmap of variety and helping you help you. So thank you for listening to my little segment, the Toddler Test Kitchen. I have included a recipe on Feeding the Future's show page. It's a 5 flavors chicken pineapple curry. So all of those flavors incorporated in one dish. And it's heritageradionetwork.org, and Feeding the Future's page has a whole, every week we post a recipe that sort of goes with the theme of that week's show. So now I get to take a little break and introduce my guest, Rick Mast, who I'm just so happy to have here today. And I feel like there's a great segue here. Bitter and sweet coming together in the perfect bar. Welcome, Rick.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great.
This is great. I'm going to take a quick break before I unleash my questions on you. So please stay tuned for the second half of Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network. We're here with Rick Mast, and I'm your host, Oriane Cosentino. Thanks so much.
You're listening to Presidential Pardon by TaxStar on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more Feeding the Future. Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Welcome back to Feeding the Future on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Oriane Cosentino, and thank you for listening. Wanted to say, if you can't hear us live at heritageradionetwork.org, please visit the archives, or you could download podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher. So I just gave a little monologue about trying to incorporate the five flavors into our daily eating habits. And I had this, I'm going to relive this killer segue for you guys, where I introduced my guest, Rick Mast, and then was like, he takes the bitter cacao and just a bit of sweetness and mix them together to be a fabulous handmade chocolate. Yeah. And hi, Rick.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I'd like to say, introduce yourself. I'm sure you do this all the time. So
yeah, no, of course. Well, I'm a chocolate maker. My brother and I are chocolate makers, and we founded Mast Brothers Chocolate back in 2007. And just a quick little history to catch you up to date, but we were making chocolate in our apartment for many years before we started full-time, and we were experiencing what I think a lot of people, especially in Brooklyn, but throughout the world now, experience, and that's a curiosity for how food is made and for connecting ourselves to where things come from. And when we kind of started revealing how little is known about chocolate, and the flavor potential of chocolate, once you really start breaking it down, how it's made. We started making it in our apartment, and a few years later, quit our day jobs. I was a line cook, and my brother worked in film on the accounting side, and we thought we'd be able to put our heads together, and we created Mast Brothers Chocolate. And now, 6 years later, 7 years, 6 years later, we have, 35 employees, our chocolate's available everywhere, and we get to work with some of the great chefs in the world using our chocolate. So it's been a really fun ride so far.
I know that you took some very special, intricate steps in the beginning to find out where exactly chocolate comes from. Can you just recount a little story?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we really started from square one. We needed to know how chocolate is made. Can you make chocolate in your apartment? We had been making, we'd been curing meats, homebrewing beer. We were very curious about all of these things, making our own cheeses, all that sort of thing. And we thought, can you make chocolate in your apartment? Can you just find the ingredients, simplify the process, and make it in your apartment? And we started trying to find some cocoa beans, to see if we could roast them in our oven. Or, I mean, we tried flipping them and through air poppers and woks and all sorts of things to figure out the process. And we finally got some beans. We actually just ended up calling some cocoa agents, some futures agents in Wall Street to kind of be like, hey, how do I get a hold of, you know, some beans? Because chocolate is one of those unique food categories that, you know, is still sort of a victim of the industrial age. It's 90% of most chocolate consumed is still to this day made by three companies that are kind of doing what you were talking about earlier. And that's scientifically making a chocolate bar that's meant to be, to become addictive. And to
replace a meal.
Yeah, exactly. So it's meant to be sold for a buck at a gas station. And we're trying to reintroduce chocolate to everyone that we encounter as a food product, as a natural food product.
This is kind of a basic question. I don't know if it's asked too frequently.
Yeah.
And I know that you're not trying to make a health food. But yeah. Is chocolate healthy?
I mean, obviously there are certain aspects of it that are healthy. Cacao is very healthy. Now we do sweeten ours. You know, we very much maintain a sort of a traditional approach to chocolate making that predates the industrial age, but at the same time isn't taking that sweetness away. We do specialize in dark chocolate, so everything we do is, you know, over 70%, meaning by weight the cacao represents over 70%. But our number one goal is always to make the most delicious chocolate we possibly can. And I think that our definition of delicious means a complex experience and not just a sweet and salty bar.
Yeah. And I know people of all ages are into your chocolate. What are some of the reactions that you see children having to your chocolate?
Well, I think that's the most fascinating thing. I think that's one of the fascinating things about talking with you about this, is that we see this every day in our shop. When people come in, we hold tastings all of the time for kids and their parents. And what's so fascinating is that there's this happens every time, that if a parent brings in their child and looks at the dark chocolate that we have out for samples and just lets the child be curious and just take a piece and put it in their mouth and enjoy it, the kid just loves it. Their eyes light up. They just can't wait to have more. They want to talk to their parents about it. But what happens, unfortunately, all too often, is parents say, oh, you won't like that. That's dark chocolate. And all of a sudden, you shut down that curiosity. You shut down the child before they even have a chance to experience something, you know, much more complex and interesting and nuanced and everything. And it's amazing that children, when left to their own devices, often make incredible decisions that even their parents wouldn't make.
I feel like that's also a great technique, like when you're at home, to just, like, instead of forcing a food product on a kid or, you know, a vegetable or something, to just kind of, like, leave it on the table and let their little fingers come around to it. And
yeah, exactly.
So you have, speaking of little fingers, you have a two-year-old son, correct?
Yep. I've got he just turned two May 18th. His name's Sebastian, and he's pretty much, you know, my wife and I obviously think that he's the greatest thing that ever happened on earth. So.
Oh my God, we have the two greatest children of all time.
Yeah, exactly.
What a coincidence.
Yeah.
That's great. So is Sebastian a good eater? What does the chocolate maker's son eat?
Yeah. Believe it or not, he just started eating chocolate recently. We started introducing, you know, our chocolate. We gave it to him for his birthday, obviously. But for the most part, you know, we've limited the amount of sweets that he gets, but you know, the chocolate, he does get Mass Brothers chocolate on probably a weekly basis at this point. You know, it's kind of a fun thing when he's home with the folks on the weekends, where we both work, so we see him the most on the weekends, and it's kind of a fun little treat we give him.
Does he did you ever see his behavior change during, or after consuming the chocolate?
Not so much when we're just giving him our chocolate bars themselves, because the way I eat our chocolate is just in little squares, and maybe I'll just have one square at a time, and so very similar with him. Now, when we've made, you know, for his birthday, we made a chocolate on, our executive pastry chef made a cake for him, and it's just chocolate on chocolate on chocolate, and that we definitely saw a behavioral change after that, but I think that has more to do with the sugar than it does the cacao in our chocolate.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Iowa.
Iowa, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And were you more of like a processed foods upbringing or a natural foods upbringing?
Yeah, definitely probably a pretty typical Midwestern upbringing, middle-class upbringing of a lot of processed foods, but definitely, you know, we had a substantial garden, and our mother wasn't, I wouldn't necessarily categorize her as a brilliant cook, but she was a working single mom, and considering all of the disadvantages, that she did pretty good. Yeah, she did pretty good. I do think that there is a sort of, despite all of that, it was still a lot of processed foods, lots of Kraft macaroni and cheese and all that kind of stuff. But who doesn't occasionally love the box of Kraft macaroni and cheese, you know?
Absolutely. Occasionally, yeah. Being the keyword.
Yeah, occasionally. But so I do think that that both my brother and I, and my sister, actually, we have an older sister, we all have found ourselves in the sort of the food world. And there is a certain rebellious spirit to all of our lines of work that are kind of in rebellion to that classic Midwestern food, you know, processed food, large scale manufacturers, food processors, kind of that attitude. So,
yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. That's huge. We need all the help we can get with that.
Yeah.
We're going to take another little quick break, and we're going to come back with Rick Mast of Mast Brothers Chocolates, me, your host, Oriane Costantino, and our show on heritageradionetwork.org, Feeding the Future.
This one's called Cheese Gainsburg by TaxStar on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Oriane Costantino, and I'm here with Rick Mast of Mast Brothers Chocolates. We're discussing how Rick's family eats and the fabulous product that he's offering to the world. I know that you can get Mast Brothers in many parts of the world now, right?
Yeah, you'd be surprised where you'll bump into it.
I know. I have a bunch of friends in Paris. It's like all the rage over there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
But it is made here in lovable old Brooklyn. I know that you offer tours at the factory. So do you see a lot of school groups coming through the tours?
Yeah. We don't have just public tours, but we do give a lot of tours to schools, to various organizations, just to introduce people to chocolate, because people just don't know. 90%, I would say the large majority of people that walk into our factory have never seen a cocoa bean before, you know what I mean? And especially kids. And what's so exciting, think about raising your kids in Brooklyn these days, what you get to expose your kids to. I mean, before, you kind of, growing up in a big city, you were kind of disconnected from a lot of, agrarian
things
endeavors
from
and
the earth.
Things like that. Yeah. So, what a great, kind of like the golden age of being able to, raise kids and it's the best of both worlds. You get to, have your cake and eat it too.
This is definitely one of the headquarters of that movement.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. So this is another one of those starry-eyed questions, but what else do you hope that kids or adults are taking away from your tour besides how to make chocolate?
Well, when you come to our factory, it's really, I say this a lot, we never want to be just making a chocolate bar. We've never made just a chocolate bar ever. We want to be making a whole three-dimensional experience, and what a more literal three-dimensional experience than to see where it's made, than to connect people from where their food is, because whether it's a chocolate bar or anything, the more you know about it, actually the more delicious it's going to be. That's just the way that the more the brain is going to be working when you're tasting. So you're not just tasting, like you were saying earlier, sweet and salty, but you're tasting the experience of how it was made. You're connecting all of those dots. And it's And I think that also just to see the high standard and level of that attention to detail that goes into making a Mass Brothers chocolate bar is pretty, I find myself inspired by it as I become less and less on the production floor. I'm inspired by our chocolate makers about just the passion and the attention to detail they have.
My next question was going to be, what makes a Mass chocolate bar so special? But yeah. I think that you just told us.
Yeah, well, that too, I think that it's really, I just wanted to, if I have time, just to talk about, you've been talking about all of the five flavor components. And what's so, I think what's one thing that sets us apart is the ability to bring out these different notes, these sour and spicy and bitter notes, that it's not just a sweet treat, you know? It's a complex, complex and well-balanced tasting profile, flavor profile in every bar. And that's because it comes from a complex fruit, and we've connected people, we're trying to connect people to where it comes from, this pod that is fermented and dried and brought all the way up here to New York. So it's come a long ways, and we just hope to do it justice.
Does your son come to the shop a lot?
Yeah, yeah. Not as much as we just recently moved to Fort Greene. So we used to just live a block away from the chocolate factory, so it was a daily occurrence before, but definitely try to get him there as much as possible.
And do you think that he's influenced by your staff? I know there's a very familial aspect to yours. Does he sort of look at them as his extended family a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yep. He's got lots of uncles. Not just my brother, but a whole factory full of aunts and uncles. So,
so it's also, I feel like... revolutionizing a little bit the factory business model.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
It is taking on a lot of dimensions, which is, I'm sure, not what you expected when you were making chocolate in your home kitchen.
For sure.
As an experiment.
Yeah, but I think that's been a big part of it, is to not only reintroduce chocolate, but reintroduce family business, reintroduce human-scaled manufacturing. But, delicious people make delicious chocolate, you know, so you bring a lot of, we talk about that a lot, that every aspect of our culture has to be delicious, because that's the best way to make great chocolate.
You're sort of taking back the phrase engineering flavors.
Yeah.
By engineering them with humans' palates and not facts put into a computer and processed to target.
Yeah. I mean, all of that is done to do things. And, you know, there was a reason, I guess, initially to develop industrial agriculture, because you wanted to feed as many people as possible for as cheap as possible. And I think that there was probably some sort of good intention there. But now we've seen the bad side of that, and now it's time to kind of take that back and bring it back to the human scale and start taking pride in making things with your hands, obviously. And there's really no substitute for that anymore.
Tell us a little bit of chocolate lore, folklore.
The folklore of chocolate? Well, I mean, it's got a deep and rich history, if that's what you're curious about. But, initially, chocolate has always had a rich history, and especially Central and South America, but is known as the food of the gods. It was used as currency by the Aztecs, and it was consumed by warriors before they go off to war to make you feel great, you know. And this was before adding, you know, too much sweetness to it. Maybe they would add a little bit of... sugar cane to it, or honey. But it was really about the theobromine in the cacao that makes you feel strong. It's got a little bit of caffeine in it, but it it's a potent, it could be a potent thing, you know.
Potent and delicious thing. Do you eat too much chocolate?
I definitely eat a very calculated, measured amount of chocolate to taste for quality, to taste. It's eating chocolate for me, I primarily just eat our chocolate, and it's really about tasting for perfection, tasting to maintain high standards of quality. So to me, it's my work, it's my craft. So that's what it's a craft for me.
And if you have a day of sort of overindulgence with the chocolate, is there something that you'll seek out specifically to sort of rebalance?
Kind of cleanse the palate afterwards?
Sort of,
To pair with it nicely? I mean...
or to sort of do the opposite.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You know, that's
like,
that's
I need a salad. Or yeah,
that's
something
an interesting
like that.
Question. Probably something like that. It depends on what chocolate we're. I mean, not to sound like too much of a chocolate geek, but it depends on what variety of chocolate I'm eating. You know, for like our single origin Madagascar chocolate has a lot of sour notes to it. So its opposite would be different than a Dominican Republic origin, which is really earthy. You know, so then maybe I'd want to do something more fruity to counteract that. But yeah, it's. I don't know if there's anything that I kind of conscientiously do to offset.
Or crave.
Yeah, example. Yeah, or crave afterwards. Maybe some water.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us just how to, if anybody would like to do a tour or to organize a tour for our school group or something, how do we contact? Or
yeah,
the best
yeah, we
way?
Do give private tours, and you can just contact our office. We go to our website, and their phone number's on there, and give us a call, and we'd be more than happy to do our best to organize a private tour.
And the website is?
The website is massbrothers.com. And just one more thing before we go.
Please.
We do have our first book coming out this fall, so we're really excited about it. It talks a lot about these kind of things and all sorts of other things, and it has 100 recipes and beautiful photography, but we're super stoked and super proud of it. And you can even... it's available for pre-sale right now on Amazon, so you can check it out.
Now I'm super stoked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, Rick Mast.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Heritage Radio Network's Feeding the Future, and I'm your host, Orion.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.